Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Manipro, providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. Manipro, nurturing life. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer. My co-host is poultry advocate and author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles, Pat Foreman. Today is Tuesday, April 26th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. From there, you can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, visit our blog, sign up for our monthly e-newsletter, The Chicken Scratch, and get all kinds of great Chicken Whisperer gear. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I invite you to join us in the live chicken chat room that's going on right now. You can talk with other Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the world. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guests when we have them on. All you have to do is click on that Chat Now button at our homepage there at Blog Talk Radio. In fact, the chat room's probably automatically opened up anyway. Just hit the Chat Now button. If it hasn't, take a moment to register. It just takes a second to register. That will get you your own unique and fun creative screen name. Then you can actually come in the chat room, sit a spell, have a great time, meet some new friends, participate, let us know what you're thinking, what kind of questions you have, meet some new friends. So we hope you'll do that today. Just take a moment, register, and then you can come on into the chat room and have a good time. I would also like to invite you to mark this radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. We hope you'll take a moment to do this today. And again, I want to thank you all for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Manipro.
Manipro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that Manipro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. Manipro, nurturing life.
If you have experienced the disappointment of broken or weak eggshells, try Manipro's oyster shell. Adding oyster shell to your flock's feeding program helps provide the calcium they need for strong eggshells. So don't let those beautiful eggs go to waste. Try Manipro's oyster shell for your pullets and layers.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, hens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Hey ladies, do you have a hard time finding the perfect gift for that animal lover on your list? I did, but not anymore. I shop at HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a great selection of dog, cat, horse, and chicken gifts that are not only cute, but affordable too. Check them out at HobbyHillFarm.com and become a Facebook fan at Facebook.com/HobbyHillFarm to receive updates on new products and special discounts. I just know you're going to love HobbyHillFarm.com. I do.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Terrible Tuesday. We will get through this week together as always, and before we know it, it will be Friday again. But in order to get to, it's not going to be so terrible because we have some awesome guests today. In order to get to this Tuesday and get this show on the road, it is now time to bring on, of course, you know who it is. Let me see. Ah, here we go. Got to push the right button. The one, the only, the author, and everybody gets a trophy, Pat Foreman.
Yeah. Yes, that's me, You get a trophy just for being here. Whisper, why is it a terrible Tuesday? What's going on?
I just, at spur of the moment, that was the only word that I could think of that would started with a ta-ta-ta, terrible Tuesday. No. So far, it's been pretty good. I was up early, had a lot of things to do today, made a little round trip, and I hate to really go anywhere with gas prices the way they are, but to a friend's house and pick up an incubator and egg turner. It is that time of year again where my wife is hatching eggs in the classroom. Now, we have two. Thought we had three, but it looks like we just have two. And, of course, we donated one to the local 4-H, so we borrowed that one back because it wasn't in use. And then we're borrowing another one. I think she'll have three or four set up in three or four of the kindergarten classrooms at her school, including hers. And I think she's getting about 50 or 60 eggs today. And so they're hoping to actually set them today or tomorrow. And we'll go down this road again with all the kindergartners there at Jen's school. So I had to make a little round trip to go pick up that incubator for her school, and but had a good time nonetheless doing that. I stopped by a local feed and seed store that I haven't seen in a long time. Really good friends, and have supported the CW cause from when it was just in its infancy at TC Country. You know, a lot of times they've given away prizes here on the show, and they definitely sponsor our local backyard poultry meetup group. So it was good to see Fabio and Sabine there and see their store again, and as beautiful as ever. And then, of course, on my way back yesterday, it was interesting. I was kind of venting about the quality of television out there when, you know, the weekend when I stay in a hotel or go up and see my folks and they actually have cable or satellite, which we don't. We were venting about some of the crazy shows. And today I get to vent a little bit about smokers. Twice today, one of my pet peeves, twice today, someone in front of me had my windows down, enjoying the beautiful weather, and all of a sudden just smoke comes barreling into my car. I'm gagging and coughing, and, you know, either the car in front of me has their windows down and they're smoking, or is the car next to me smoking, blowing out that horrible cancer-causing air. And so I follow them. They happen to be going the same way I'm going, and it happens all the time. So I'm just prepared. I got my hand on the horn, and sure enough, quick, there goes that cigarette right out the window, littering. I mean, they're the worst. And yeah, I guess I shouldn't stereotype because there's probably some very nice smokers out there. You need to stop, by the way. But more times than not, I'm behind them and I'm waiting on it. And I get up and start riding a little bit closer than I should. And as soon as they flick that cigarette out, I'm on that horn for about 10 minutes. There's no possible way they can't understand what I'm doing. But I mean, as soon as I'm waiting on it, as soon as they flick that cigarette out the window, man, I'm just right down on the horn. It's absolutely amazing. So yeah, it happened twice today. Two different episodes, smoke coming through my windows, gagging, choking, and then all of a sudden, boom, there goes the cigarette right out the window. Now, on my personal Facebook page, you know, I post a lot of things that I don't post on my corporate, if you'd say, Facebook page, personal thoughts and opinions and things like that, and you kind of stir the pot a little bit. But I've also been known to take pictures in parking lots. I'll come out of a store, and lo and behold, there's where some smoker has emptied their ashtray right there in the parking lot. You know, they pull out their ashtray and just dump it right there on the floor. So there, right there, so for everybody to step in. If you ever, and I challenge anybody in any state, anywhere in the country, when you come up to a red light and stop, look outside along the curb there, and what do you see? You see cigarette butts from the curb all the way back, sitting there, littering our highways, and it's just nasty. And I don't know why they feel compelled that they can flip their little cigarette butts out the window every time they come to a red light or when they're riding down the road to flick that out. I mean, it's just amazing to me. And they don't seem to biodegrade; they just stay there forever. And then our tax dollars end up having to somebody to come clean that stuff up because they end up thinking that they own the road and can flick their cigarettes out or empty their cigarette trays in the parking lots out of their car. So I've noticed this. I've posted pictures of it before on my Facebook. And then, you know, it's just, you know, someone always comes up with something else. So, oh, well, I smoke, but that's not me. And that's fine, but all the other millions of smokers, and I say that because all you have to do is whenever you stop at a red light or a stop sign, I don't care where you're at in this beautiful nation, look at the ground right along the curb, cigarette butt after cigarette butt after cigarette butt. So yesterday I was talking about the crappy shows on TV, like shows about people getting tickets and 16-year-olds that are pregnant and parents that spend billions of dollars on parties, and today my little five-minute rant is about the nastiness that I see every day. In fact, I'm so prepared about it. I'm waiting for them to flick that cigarette so I can just lay on that horn behind them when they do that. So one of these days, and I've threatened to do this, and Jen's like, no, you'll get us killed, when we're at a stop sign and they flick it out to get out of my car, pick it up, and flick it back in their car. I've threatened to do that. Seriously, they flick it out the window. We're sitting there at the stoplight. Maybe they're in front of me. They flick it out or drop it out the window. I just want to get out of my car, go up there, pick it up, and flick it back into their car and give them a piece of my mind. Maybe, you know, it's one of those things. So, but other than that, it's going to be a good Tuesday. We've got some awesome guests today and an awesome topic. And how about yourself? What have you been doing today?
Well, the cigarette butts, I find them very annoying, too. It is amazing they don't seem to disintegrate very fast, do they? They just kind of hang around. But I don't know, we don't have that much of a problem up here. Maybe you should move here. I mean, there are some people that smoke, but there's not cigarette butts all along the highway or even in town. But it is a It is a very addicting habit. There's no question about that. But on the good news today, I've got here's the tally, and it's not quite as good as I wanted, but so far I've got 8 little baby chicks that are hatched out under their mamas. There's 2 under one and 6 under the other. They're heritage hybrids. 6 eggs haven't hatched yet, and so now it's going on to about over 24 hours. So I don't know if they'll hatch or not. So 6 of them are still under their mama. 2 of them have died. Whisper, one didn't get out of the shell when the mother was done. Apparently the other 6 were ready to go, and this one almost tipped out. It was a little moron, but he didn't make it. And then the other one I found yesterday, and I'm not sure what happened, but just found it dead. It had gotten out of the shell, but it was just laying dead there in the litter. So I don't know if another hen had gotten to it or quite what had happened. So, but that's what I'm doing today. I'm enjoying these little peeps. They are just adorable. And the hens do their little cluck thing, you know, cluck, cluck, cluck. They're like a metronome keeping those little babies with them all the time. So that's my big news. I mean, to me, it doesn't get any better than that. I'm just having a blast.
Awesome.
It doesn't take much, does it?
Well, they're awesome. We'll be following in your footsteps here in about 21, 22 days.
We'll see them. I mean, you're going to be up here this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so you can see my new little babies.
Are you going to bring them?
Well, I was hoping you'd stop by the house. I mean...
How far away are you from Augusta?
It's about a little over 30 miles. Not that far.
Okay.
In fact, we could even do the show from here if you wanted to. Does that make it a little closer to you from wherever you're coming from down there, Georgia?
You know, depending, I haven't totally mapped our route yet. I generally know where we're going, but I'll take a look, and it may be a possibility that we do the show from there on a Friday, possibly, when we give the coop away. But I'll just have to look and see what our time schedule is and where we will be along the way. And
yep, I'm right off of 81, just about 5 miles off of 81.
I will definitely take a look. Perfect.
Yeah.
So that's been kind of going on with Pat and I. It's now time to move on a little bit for our ever-so-popular Chickens in the News segment, Chickens in the News, brought to you by Meyer Hatchery up in Polk, Ohio. It is the season to order some new chicks. Visit them online at meyerhatchery.com. They don't just have baby chicks, but they have all kinds of books and gear and pluckers and nesting boxes and all kinds of decor. So visit them online at meyerhatchery.com. We'll let you start, Pat, if you have anything regarding Chickens in the News.
Well, I do. This one is one of the first studies I've really... there are some trickling out there, but this one is pretty amazing. It's from The Nation, and this is from USA Today in their Nation section. And it says, pesticide exposure in womb is linked to low IQ.
Hmm.
Pesticide exposure in the womb is linked to low IQ. So what they're saying is pregnant women are urged to wash produce and avoid home chemicals. And this is by Liz... Liz Sazabo, says children exposed to high pesticide levels in the womb have lower IQs than other kids, according to 3 independent studies that were released by the Environmental Health Perspective. The studies involved more than 400 children. They were followed from birth through ages 6 to 9, and they were both from urban and rural areas. And they found, these researchers were from the University of California, Berkeley, and Columbia University in New York, and Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York. So these aren't any just little whimsical, researchers here. These are really, really solid gold credits. They were saying that the Berkeley study found that the most heavily exposed children scored an average of 7 points lower on the IQ test compared with children with lower pesticide levels exposures. On the IQ test, the average score is around 100, whatever. And I know the IQ tests have a lot of controversy about them based on, culture and the kinds of questions they ask, but it's just one of many indicators. And they're saying that even a difference of 2 or 3 points, the size of the IQ lost caused by lead, which is known to cause brain damage, this can have an enormous impact on the kids. Because the populations, they're talking in general now, because of populations' IQ scores, when plotted on a graph, they fall along a bell curve, And they're saying shifting the entire curve down, even if it's just a few points, causes a huge jump in the number of kids with lower intelligence and a dramatic loss of the number of the super smart kids. So whatever that means, if you got the whole population exposed to pesticides and all the kids, which we know, you know, they're everywhere, they know it's shifting the IQ level down, that affects the whole population. So it also sharply increases the number of children that need remedial education. So there's a lot of unintended consequences further on down the road. It says that pesticide exposure after birth, this is after birth, wasn't linked to the lower intelligence scores. And this is an important thing that we're finding out more and more, that time in the womb is so precious and there's so much development takes place that if you don't have the proper nutrition there or have too much of a bad thing there like pesticides, it causes untoward consequences. So all this suggests that the harm of the chemicals is, of course, greatest during early pregnancy when that little brain is just starting to develop. It says such long-running studies are the strongest practical way to study the potential harm from chemicals. And it seems like there are so few of them, because who's going to fund them? I mean, who's going to fund these chemical studies? The only way to definitively prove a cause and effect would be to purposely expose half the children in a study to pesticides, and the other half would not be exposed. And, of course, we would consider that as unethical, so that's not going to happen. So that's why these studies are important to follow the whole group that right along. This is earlier studies.
Unethical? Unethical? Our own government did that. Our own United States government did that to our own people a few years back, if you remember. When they purposely gave, I think it was African-American men, syphilis. Remember that? Yeah, that was our own government, people. You need to research that. So maybe we've come a little bit further than that, that we're not going to infect half our kids with and insecticides and whatnot. But don't be so surprised. Do your research. Our own government did that. I believe it was. I'll look at the study at the break to African-American men and gave them syphilis on purpose and didn't even tell them. That should be mainstream media. You should look that up if you don't know that our own government did that. So, okay, carry on, Pat. Just had to make that point.
Well, that was the Tuskegee case, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Tuskegee. Yeah. Well, you know, we're always evolving, I guess. So we can only hope for a better population the next go round. This is just about it. But it's saying the earlier studies linked to a specific type of bug killer. Was included in the studies, and those were the organophosphate pesticides. And those are linked with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD. So now here we have another one about, you know, you get pesticides with these young kids, it affects their brains, and they get ADHD. So, again, you know, these are across the population, so any exposure to the whole group is going to bring us all down in a way, if that makes sense, based on that bell curve. Yeah. It says these pesticides are often used on crops. I mean, we know they're often used on crops, and people are exposed to them through eating the fruits and the vegetables, as well as, of course, when they're applied and they get groundwater, they get in the air. And what this study says is that pregnant women should not shun fresh fruits. No, not at all. But instead make sure and wash them, the mm-hmm. fruits and the vegetables, well, or buy organic produce, and in general, limit the use of chemicals at home. So if you've got ants or something running around, don't go spraying those organophosphate pesticides all over the place. You might have to spray your little womb-bound child instead and affect them. So I thought that this is all the more, we got to get more towards organic. Won't it be wonderful when all the foods are produced in an organic, healthy way in living soils? And I think that's when we'll really be a mile marker, a big benchmark for the whole human race. That's all I've got here, Whisper.
No, thank you very much for that. Yeah, Jen's reading a book. She's finished the book. I was going to share it. She had it marked for me, and now I'm not sure where the book is and all this moving clutter. But about that, they took cord blood from I think it was cord blood from so many babies once they were born and ran tests on it. And it was a handful, so I don't know if it would categorize as a big study. I don't know. The number seemed to be between 30 and 50. Maybe it was 75 babies and did tests and found something like several hundred different carcinogenics or chemicals in the blood. Many were carcinogenic, from Teflon to ant spray to just all this stuff. It was absolutely horrible and really, really an eye-opener. Speaking of that kind of natural living and whatnot, Jen and I attended a great meeting last night. It was the National Holistic Moms Network, but it was their local Atlanta chapter. And that was great. They had about 30, 40, maybe about 40 people showed up, between 30 and 40, and it was great. And we all introduced ourselves and had a really great time, and it was really, really good. It was pleasing to see the number of moms, and some were very new, just getting on the kind of the natural, holistic, organic, whatever, you know, many different levels there, movement. And then some that were about as green as the green grass growing on the golf course. So it was very interesting.
That's an interesting analogy.
It just popped into my head, green grass. So, but yeah, and it was great to talk with them and see them, and they all had different really priorities, whether one cooking organic or getting crap out of their house that causes disease, or you know, there was a term that I wasn't familiar with. God, I can't remember what it was, API or something parenting, anyway. And there was a group of parents I completely forget it. Anyway, it was a great time. It was a really good time. We had a good time with that. And that was, it's too bad we're moving. We may have to make our monthly trip up here to deal with business in Atlanta with the business and whatnot on a Sunday night or a Monday, so we can start attending these on one Monday night. We had a really good time. So I've got some chickens in the news here, and it kind of goes along with what we heard from Longmont, Colorado, maybe a year ago. It comes to us from the Eastern Iowa Life. Eastern Iowa Life. Chickens not ruffling any feathers in Cedar Rapids. This comes to us from, let me see, who is it? Matt Widener. Cedar Rapids. Matt Widener is baffled. Months after the end of a hard-boiled battle over backyard chickens, it's as if no one even gives a cluck. I'm actually quite surprised, said Widener, the Cedar Rapids building official in charge of issuing permits for homeowners to keep hens. This has been one of the least active ordinances I've ever seen. Duh, we tried to tell you that. Members of Cedar Rapids Citizens for the Legalization of Urban Chickens, CLUC, worked at least a year before the city council passed an ordinance last summer to allow up to 6 hens per household. Since then, Widener said, little has happened. Number one, no odor complaints. Told ya! No flocks of chickens roaming the streets. Told ya! Only just a handful of complaints about noise. Told ya. Those were for roosters, which are not legal under the ordinance to begin with, and were probably already in the city before the measure passed, he said. One at-large chicken was found after the law passed, but Wider said no one had a permit in that neighborhood where it was roaming loose to begin with, and it was unlikely set loose by someone. Animal control workers found a home for the hen. We're taking 6 complaints. Ready for this? Ready for this? Listen up, people. We're taking 6, not 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 or 5, but 6 complaints out of a city of 128,000, he said. Even more surprising is that just 18 permits to keep hens have actually been issued. The interest in this seems quite low compared to what we anticipated, he said. That isn't a negative, he noted, because the people who have taken out permits are doing so responsibly. It says residents must take an approved class, pay a $25 annual fee, and meet other requirements such as notifying neighbors, womp, 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 before they get chickens.
That's ridiculous.
And keeping the hens in an enclosed fence at all times. So, again, getting your neighbor's approval to keep chickens. I don't think I had to get approval from my neighbors to pop out a kid to buy a Harley Davidson, to get my loud barking hound dog that I used to hunt possums with and coons and everything else. I don't think I needed to get a permit for that cat I had that goes and craps in my neighbor's garden every day. So, but I had to get a permit for my chickens. That's what I'd be saying if I lived there. But nonetheless, they did a pretty good job getting that law passed. Chickens are allowed. And now, just like Longmont, Colorado, where they were all up in arms about allowing chickens, ended up having just, what, like 4 complaints out of the 28,000 complaints that came in. And they said, hey, we have no problems with this. I don't know what the big deal was. It's no problem. Everybody's getting along just fine. And that was from the city itself. Yeah, Pat. So it's, again, I hate to say this, but I told you so.
Yeah, you know what's interesting, Whisper, is the cities that are requiring permits. Remember, I think it was one of the cities in Michigan where they finally got it so people could have, I think it was a $35 permit fee or something. It was a little high. And they found that nobody got permits because they just kept them anyway under the radar.
Yeah.
So they didn't really know how many people had chickens at all. And there weren't any reports from the police, so it was like a null issue. Anyway. So permits don't really work for chickens. I mean, the dogs, if you find one roaming at large or something, you can at least get it home with a permit. But with chickens, it's just way more administrative work than what it's worth.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people won't do it. Oh, dear.
Amazing. Just totally amazing. All righty. Well, guess what? It is exactly 1:30, which means it's time for a commercial break. And then when we return, Pat and I will welcome Society for Preservation of Poultry Antiquities author Christine Heinrich, historian with the SVPA and author Christine Heinrich, and Moran's breeder Dick Dickerson, and they're going to discuss the Moran's entry into the American Standard of Perfection. Very, very exciting. Very exciting topic. I know many of the Morans or the Morans or whatever you want to call them, you know, them birds that lay them real dark eggs. So
they are popular.
Yes, they are very, very popular. Yep. Yeah. So whether you pronounce it Moran or Moran or Marins or I've heard it, you know, when I go to the shows in all three ways. So I just say, you know, them birds that lay them dark, dark eggs. And everybody knows what you're talking about. So they're going to come on and tell us about the hard work that's gone in over the years of getting this recognized and the hard work that's been done and tell us about, of course, the breeds themselves. So we're great show. So get that chicken whisperer pen and paper ready, because when we come back after this short break, we're going to be talking all about the Morans, the Morans, the Marins, are them little birds that lay them dark chocolate-colored eggs. However you want to call it, that's what we're going to be talking about when we come back after this short break. Stay with us, folks.
Looking for something? Find it online at Bidbird Auctions. Bidbird.com is an online auction service that caters specifically to the poultry, waterfowl, game bird, and pigeon hobbyists. With so many rare and exciting species listed daily and in a wide variety of categories, you'll want to visit often. Join hundreds of the nation's top breeders that have made Bidbird Auctions their new home. And get sold on Bidbird. When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensey.com. Brensey spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensey.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensey, technology you can trust. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry. With the Chicken Whisperer, it is now time to go to the phone lines here, bring Pat right back on live, and, of course, bring, I believe, Christine back live. And welcome back to the show, Christine. It's always good to have you.
I was in your comments on cigarette butts. You know, they really are. You know, I hate to get down on smokers who feel they're already beleaguered, and I understand, and there was a time when I smoked and the whole thing, but... You're right. They need to quit, and those cigarette butts are very dangerous. There was a beach cleanup out here in California, and I think that's the most common piece of trash that is picked up off the beach. And you know those cigarette butts, they trap a lot of nicotine and tars. They're very toxic, and when fish and birds eat them, they die. Yeah, so it's a very bad problem. I'll email to you a link to a friend's article that she wrote about this. So it's, you know, it's not just on land, which of course is bad enough, but they stay in the environment. They don't biodegrade very well, and you're right. This is a bigger problem than just personal health. Yeah, so, and you certainly wouldn't want a chicken to eat one of them. That would be horrible.
Definitely.
Ooh, they'd be, their crops would be butt bound.
Yeah, exactly. It might very well kill a chicken. I certainly would not want one near them. So there you are. But on a happier topic, we're talking about it's very unusual it's not very unusual, but it takes a lot of work, as Dick will explain, to get a breed accepted into the standard, and he has worked with the APA to get not only a new breed accepted, but also a new color variety, the black copper, which is not recognized in any other breed. So, Dick, why don't you tell us about that?
Am I on?
You sure
You're
are.
Live.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. All right. I've been listening the last 30 minutes, so I'm really pleased to be with you.
Thank you.
I went to school years ago after I finished school here in the States. I went to school in France and became aware of the breed. I visited actually the town called Moron, and it's over on the Atlantic coast, and somewhat they claim it's a swampy area, but I never saw the swamps. But it was very prevalent, the dark eggs and the chickens that the farmers had, and then I went to some poultry shows, and my family had the cuckoo Moron. It's spelt with an S, but they don't pronounce it over in France. Here in the States, we say everything. Moran's is probably the most prevalent pronunciation. But I started with cuckoos. My grandfathers and some of my uncles brought poultry back from Europe after World War II. And it was very easy to bring poultry in from Europe at that time. And a lot of the servicemen that were farmers or young farm fellows, they brought poultry back for their families. And it was before all the regulations were put on and it became so difficult and expensive to ship. But we got our start in the cuckoos and the dark eggs. And I think the dark eggs what got everybody interested. 3.5 years ago, we started the Yahoo groups for Moran's, and I can tell you that as of 2 days ago, we had over 1,000 people that have signed up and are on the Yahoo groups.
Wow.
And so it's tremendous interest. And we also have a paid membership, which has grown tremendously as well. And we have a website, and it's just tremendous interest. And when I started exhibiting at the shows, I was literally the only person showing the black coppers. And now there are hundreds of people, and I'm just thrilled to death.
When did you first start showing, Dick?
I was about 15 years old, and I went with my granddads. Both of them had the interest in the poultry, and started, and I did go to school. I felt like I was going to go to school all my life, but I went to school in Egypt as well and got interested in the Egyptian Fayunis, and
mm-hmm.
I have a good flock of those. It's one of the two oldest breeds in the world, and it's very hardy. They take the heat very well. They take the cold very well, and they're something of a desert chicken, and lay very early in life and lay a long time, and very good breed. But my primary interest is grown as Moran's, and I have built up a good flock. I'm hatching today, in fact. And
how old are you?
There are 12 official colors or varieties of Moran's, and that adds a lot to it. The excitement is if you like a white bird, there's white ones. If you like a black bird, there's black ones. Black coppers, blues, and so forth. In France, 9 of those are recognized. And starting back in the late 1700s, 1800s, the breed was developed. And 1929, they had a World Congress, and they've had one ever since. And each country that has Moran's and has a club can send a delegate to that.
Wow.
And in
Did
fact,
you go?
Next November, a group of us from the States are planning to go. I have visited over there a number of times, and two summers ago, I visited Moran's breeders in England and also in France and just had a wonderful time. And they have all the same problems we do. They try to get a darker and darker egg, and then every once in a while they'll have some problem where they'll start going light again, and so they have to breed selectively, and they get the dark egg again. And they have a lot of egg contests like we have in the States. We started working towards the recognition. We had a meeting here at my home about 4 years ago, and officially started our club, the Moran's Chicken Club USA, and that's how we're listed on the website. We had a wonderful group and elected temporary officers, and then since then, with a large membership, we've had regular elections. But a lovely English lady named Beverly Davis was elected president, and I was the vice president in charge of all the shows and organizing them. And Beverly Davis is a geneticist and understands genetics. My limited amount is nowhere compared to hers. A lovely English lady who has added so much to our club. And she had to sacrifice a little bit. We had to make a choice when put a workshop on 4 years ago for the American Poultry Association Board of Directors. And we met out in Ventura at the National APA show and did a presentation for judges and also for the board. And we had to make a decision whether we wanted feather-legged or smooth-legged or shanked. And we went with what the French and most of the world have, and that's the feather-legged. England, they have the smooth-legged. So
it's not going to be just a separate class
variety.
Thank you.
We would have to go through all the process, and I'm not sure we'll do that. We may one day, but it's a lengthy process. What you have to do is take and I did this for the black coppers when I was the first one showing. You have to have two shows in a year where you show in like a cuckoo or a black copper. You have to have two cockbirds, two hens, two cockerels, and two pullets entered in a show, and it has to be verified, and the judge has to sign that they were there and present, not just entered, but present. And you have to do that for two shows for 2 years. So it's a total of four shows, and all of them have to be documented. And that's a bare minimum. We had a lot more than that. I mean, I got other people involved, and so they started popping up at lots of shows. And then the interest on the Internet, and, eBay, and so forth. And after we went through those, we had to have five individuals that could attest and sign a notarized document that they had bred that particular variety of Morans for a minimum of 5 years. And all that was submitted with a fee to the APA. And then they notified us that they would grant a special meet just for that variety of Moran. And so we had the special meet, the official one where we were approved. We had that in Noonan, Georgia, at their big show that's held there annually at their county fair.
That was a great
show. And it's one of the prettiest shows in America with all the white tents and then the buildings as well. And so there were, I think, seven members of the APA board that were present. And Pat Malone, one of the most distinguished judges in America, was the presiding judge. And but the president of the APA was there, the secretary treasurer, a number of board members, and I'm honored that I'm also on the board of the APA, and I represent a good part of the South and Southeast. And anyway, we had to have 50 black coppers present and showing, and we had actually 109 that were entered. And so, and then we had a total of the biggest entry in the history of the Western Hemisphere of Morans. We had 11 varieties entered, and a total of 176 Morans were there, and a lot of excitement. And we took a whole tent, a beautiful tent, and it was so many folks. We had folks from 24 states and that exhibited, and it was just a thrill. A lot of us had never met before. We had chatted on the telephone or on the online with our computers, but we finally got to all meet, and it was a thrill. And the judge, when it was over with, we had a nice dinner, and he gave us his critique and said that he was recommending the approval of black coppers. And then 2 weeks ago, I was at the semi-annual APA meet out in the Northwest in Washington State. And at that meeting at 12 midnight, I remember I made the motion for the approval after the committee report, two committee reports recommended. And so they were officially recognized, and the next day they were legal to be shown in the Continental class at all the shows all over America. And
wow.
It's been a long time since a new breed actually has been approved, so we were thrilled. And APA had tightened up quite a bit on approval of new breeds. They wanted to make sure that it was truly a popular breed and that there were people all over America interested. And, of course, we've got the proof with over 1,000 on our site, Yahoo Groups, and you can't open a poultry magazine now that there's not something about Moran. So we've been thrilled. I guess that's about in a nutshell. You know, we've already done all the preliminary for the Wheatons, and we have gone through the 2 years, actually about 3 years, of a minimum of two shows a year where we had the necessary, we call it the 2-2-2-2, two cocks, two cockles, two hens, and two pullets of that variety. And you know, sometimes people call it the color, but it's actually officially the variety. And so we have a long list of, you know, the 12 different color varieties. And I think one by one, it'll take us a number of years. And some of them are very, very rare in this country. Some of the varieties are. And others are much more prevalent. Black coppers are noted for their dark, dark eggs. And we have a color chart that lists the colors intensity, starting with a one that's extremely light. It's too light. We don't even call it a Moran colored egg. And then it goes on up to a 9. I've never seen a 9, even in France. It's almost jet black, reddish black. But we do have in this country 6, 7, and even 8s in the darkness. I would caution anybody that gets interested and goes on eBay that people are not always as honest as they should be on there, and they're people that I've never heard of, and I know most everybody in the country, it seems like, that because I travel so much to the shows, but they have pictures of eggs on there that look very dark, but if you order them, they're not dark when you get them. So I would caution people to make sure you know who you buy your eggs from and see them in person if possible. And I try to selectively only hatch chicks from my darkest eggs. Whenever you have a real light egg, I don't put it in the incubator.
I got a question for you, Dick, that came up earlier, and that is what's the best way to candle them? I've got some Moran eggs that I set, and I had a terrible time trying to figure out if they were fertile or not because I couldn't see through that dark shell.
Yeah, well, I do it, and do it actually with just a small light that I purchased from one of the poultry houses. Murray McMurray, and I think I paid $11-$12 for it. But some people have very strong ones that are very, you know, expensive. You can get them on up over $100. But I just make sure that the lights are off. That's the key thing, that it's dark. And then candle it. And I have a very good lady that helps me each day with my birds, and because I do travel to a lot of shows, and so she's invaluable in working with me. And sometimes if I have a question, we both look, you know, but it is a little harder, and you have to develop a skill at really looking. But there's little telltale signs that if you look carefully, you can see. But
some of those little hints and telltale signs?
Well,
Rick, I've been candling eggs for years, but I couldn't see through them hardly at all without a really strong light. So I just let them incubate longer, so I would have a little more time to let the chick develop. But what do you do?
Well, I do that too. I don't candle as often. Some people start when it's a week, but I just don't do that. I wait till about 3 days before they're due to hatch, and if you look closely through that dark shell, there's little places where the color is not as strong. And if that egg has not developed a chick in it, you can usually see a little lighter color coming back to you through that egg. And that's another thing, I don't know, it's very unique how the egg color develops. I also have Araucanas that lay the sky blue egg. And the shell develops internally in the chicken, and that blue shell is there as the egg passes out into the world. But the Morans are the only known chicken in the world that actually has a color gland. It has two little glands, and as the egg is being laid, it passes through the two glands, and it is sprayed. The egg is actually sprayed with the dark color.
Really?
And when the chicken first, the egg drops out, it is still wet. It takes about 2 minutes for it to dry. So whatever it drops on, it will frequently, if it's on straw, it'll have little straw marks on the color. So some people have resorted to cloth in their nest so that when it falls out, it doesn't have the straw marks or whatever it might touch. But it takes about 2 minutes. And if you wash the eggs, you will wash part of the color off. And so it's not ingrained in the shell, but is actually on the surface of the shell. And we do have a lot of egg contests. It's become extremely popular. And in fact, the APA the board is now talking about sponsoring more egg contests at the shows. But it draws a lot of interest, and the Northwest Poultry Club 2 weeks ago had a nice egg contest, and then the Moran Club had an egg contest. We sort of outdid the Poultry Club. I think we had 24 entries from around America that people had sent in, and this is getting to be almost a weekly event around the country at major poultry shows.
Wow.
It's to have the egg contest, and it does keep us going. It's a twofold thing. The Moran is a very good eating chicken also. I can't bring myself to eat my own chickens. That's terrible, but... And I hate to eat an egg that my chickens lay. I want to put it in the incubator so badly.
I have no trouble eating the eggs that my chickens lay.
At Christmas, we were short on eggs for cornbread. We eat cornbread in Tennessee here. And so we needed to make one more batch, and I had to use some of my dark eggs, and I was heartbroken. And the lady that works for me, I thought she was going to cry. But we have the incubators full right now, and I have two large ones, and I have all 12 color varieties of Morans, and so I have some eggs from each of the color varieties. As I mentioned, we've black hoppers, it is such a thrill that now we can join the rest of the world, and we have Morans that are approved by the APA, and then we will be holding, and we're not sure when we'll have the APA special meet for the Wheatons, but we may have it at Crossroads Show up in Indianapolis at the end of October, and that will
be
an exciting. That may be the biggest show of the year nationwide. The other big one is the Ohio National, which is always in November, and that's a thrill also to go to either one of those shows. But the Crossroads has developed into a gigantic show, and there'll be literally 7,000 birds will be entered there, and maybe even more this time. And a lot of national clubs will have their annual meets there. And in our case, if we have a qualifying meet, then it could be that Wheaton's will be approved at that time. If we get our minimum of 50 present, and they're good quality, and you have to have a minimum of 5 exhibitors, but we surpassed that, as I mentioned, when we had 24 exhibitors from around the country that brought their black coppers in Newnan. So I think we're going to have a big entry there, and the interest is just all over America. You can go on our chat line, and it's there everywhere. The interest is there, and we're thrilled about it. And we can communicate with people all over the world. One of the best geneticists out of Australia has Morans, and he answers lots and lots of questions. And then our own Beverly Davis, who is an English lady down in South Florida, she is a whiz-bang at genetics. And then we have a lady veterinarian here in Tennessee that's on nightly answering questions. And so there, it's a world of information to help us genetically. And you can, you know, there's certain combinations. It's a little hard to get blue cockbirds. They seem to almost all hatch as young pullets. And so there's exciting, I think, and interesting genetics we call it making the blues, where you breed a splash to a black and you get your blues. And it's interesting to see that pop out, where 50% of them will be blue, 25% splash, 25% black. And so we come up with our blues in a genetics way that I wouldn't be able to explain it very well. I know what the results are, but a genetics person understands all the reasons for the colors. But we have great fun. As I say, it's a common interest, and you will find people from every walk of life. In listening to your earlier part of the show and chickens and the law is changing, and I think in my little town that's 2 miles from here, people already, even though it's an anti-ordinance, I think the city council is going to change that now because people are keeping chickens all over the town.
That's right. They're just going ahead and doing it, aren't they?
They are. They are. And I'm thinking seriously about building a little hotel in that town, and I may introduce chickens myself, Moran.
Good for you, Dick. Listen, Dick, we're going to take just a little break to honor our sponsors here. And when we come back, maybe you could talk about a little bit about the egg laying. I mean, are they what kind of numbers of eggs can we expect from a Moran versus some of the other breeds, perhaps? And then also a little bit more about the shows, because I know they are very popular, and I saw one in the Lucasville show, and just what do judges look for. So we're talking with Christine Heinrich. She's the historian for the Society of Preservation of Poultry Antiquities, and Dick Dickerson, who is the legacy that brought Morans to the United States to get them approved by the APA. And Dick, thank you so much for that. We'll be right back. Stay tuned, folks.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
If you're looking for a unique gift idea for that dog, cat, horse, or chicken lover, then look no further than HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a wide selection of gifts for both the home and farm. My favorite is the chicken noodle soup with noodles shaped like chickens. I'm sure you'll find everything you're looking for at HobbyHillFarm.com. That's HobbyHillFarm.com.
You've ordered your new baby chicks and even have the brooder prepared, but now it's time to order that new chicken coop. My Amish Goods offers quality-built chicken coops for every size flock and budget. They have many styles and colors to choose from and will ship them fully assembled right to your front door. Act now and receive a special upgrade at no additional charge. Visit them online at myamishgoods.com. That's MyAmishGoods.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at MountHealthy.com. That's MTHealthy.com. Or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Designed for starting and growing game birds, turkeys, ducks, geese, and broilers, ManaPro's Game Bird Showbird Crumbles feature 24% protein and a combination of vitamins, minerals, and yeast culture. This complete feed does it all, from growth and weight gain to healthy development and even improved digestion. So next time you're starting some new birds, try ManaPro's Game Bird Showbird formula and see the difference.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And I want to remind everybody, we have a great lineup for the rest of the week as well. Tomorrow we have Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, with First State Vet Supply. Thursday, we've got Back Home Magazine Hour with Richard Frudenberger. And then, of course, on Friday, another great fun Friday. And remember, this Friday, we're giving away that awesome chicken coop to one person who has collected all the secret passwords. We still have yet to give away the password on today's show, so stay tuned for that. There'll be 20 total passwords, and the correct caller on Friday that can recite all 20 passwords correctly is going to win that awesome chicken coop from critter-cages.com. Alrighty, let's get back over here to the switchboard, bring everybody back on. We want to invite you as well to post any questions you may have for Christine or Dick or Pat or myself in the chat room, of course. And we'll try to get those on the air as well. If you'd like to ask a question on the air, you're more than happy to do so. 347-637-3237. That's 347-637-3237. Okay, everybody's back on the air. We were going to continue talking about, I think, Pat, you wanted to discuss some more about the showing?
Oh, yes, about the showing. If I have an egg from one of my Morans, how can I look at it and see if it's a really good egg or not, worthy of competition? What do you look for, Dick?
Well, in a contest, we send in three eggs, and looking for them, at them when you judge, you look for uniformity in the size of the eggs, that they all be same size. You look for uniformity in the color. We look for a dark reddish chocolate color, and we want a sheen, a pretty sheen on that egg, if at all possible.
Okay. Is that like the bloom that you're talking about? Or?
That's right. That's right. Exactly. And
do showers use like mineral oil or something to get that sheen
there? Oh, you're not supposed to use anything. And
no adulteration, huh?
No alteration. And just want them clean, you know, and sometimes they'll get a little messy, but You can use a cloth just to clean them off, but you do want a clean egg. And then we have categories so that not all varieties lay as dark an egg as others. We're constantly working on it and selectively breeding and so forth. But black coppers tend to lay about the darkest of all the eggs.
Darker better in an egg show?
Yes, we try to get the darkest, although sometimes you can have the darkest egg and they won't be uniform in size, or they'll be too oblong, or they'll be possibly one real large one and a smaller one, and we want uniformity. So not always the darkest one win. In fact, out at Northwest Pacific show out in Stevenson, we had one that wasn't quite as dark. It was a black copper, but the darkest egg didn't win because they were odd sizes and were had no sheen or luster to them. And so the ones that were not much lighter, but just slightly lighter, but very uniform, were the ones that won. In France, they loved them to be speckled, which I think is interesting. Speckled. Dark, have speckles on them. And we have some of those in this country. And some judges want to know, does that help or hinder? If it has, we say it makes no difference. They can have them or not have them. But I love them to have the speckling on them. And
do they ever have the hen right there with the egg that she laid to show the the result and the producer kind of thing?
Oh well, when you enter hens at the shows, if they're in the laying season, you're going to get eggs at the show, and that happens frequently. And in fact, people want your eggs, and you have to sort of watch them and say, "Don't you dare take my eggs out of that cage when they're being shown," but. Some people say they've never seen them that dark, and they sure would like to have it, sometimes. At the egg contest, we have a set of rules that are on the Internet on our website, and people have just really cooperated in sending eggs all over the country to shows. And I won the show at the National 2 years ago, and it was with a salmon. And they were definitely the darkest of all. They were darker than the black coppers. And they were beautiful birds. That's one of the rarest varieties that we have. And they're very popular in France also. And over in France, the color that's really enjoying popularity right now is what we call whites. They call them ermines over there, but we call them whites, and they do not lay as dark an egg. I've got about as dark as you get in the country, but they're maybe a 5 on the color scale, and we do have color charts that we have available upon request, and all the judges like to get the color chart, and it was produced in France, and then we had very good printers to print it to true to color. And so it's very popular at all the shows where we have tables set up. We offer those for sale for a couple of dollars, and people just snap them right up. And I'd love to have a dozen eggs of the Morans, dark ones, and put in one or two sky blue Arikana eggs,
yeah.
Contrast.
Uh-huh.
And people just love them when you put them on exhibit at the shows.
By the way, I just posted, Dick, I was just going to say, Christine has a color chart on her blog, and I just posted that in the website. And
oh, great.
It's at poultrybookstore.blogspot.com for our listeners. It's http://poultrybookstore.blogspot.com. So, that shows it pretty good how dark they get. I mean, they get almost black, don't they?
Almost black, yes. the Belgians in Belgium, they really have developed some dark ones, and I love to go on and see theirs and from time to time. And they always attend the World Congress, which is in Leeds, France. And as I say, we have, I think we're going to have six that go next year. It's not next year, it's this year in November. And we're really excited about going over. And my French is very poor. I speak Cajun French.
And, well, it gets better after some of that fine Chardonnay.
Yes.
For the Rieslings. They have wonderful Rieslings there.
we have a Swiss lady that lives up in Michigan, and she speaks Swiss French and from Geneva area. And then we have a couple that moved from Canada that live in North Georgia that have gotten real interested, and they're planning to go. And I think our president, Bev Davis, that does not speak French, is going. And we're going to have fun. We're going to have a lot of fun and visit.
It's all about fun. Yeah.
Oh, it is. And we're going to visit a number of the farmers. Everybody who raises them is called a farmer in France. Whether they live in a city or not, they're called a farmer. And so the farmers are going to be, we think there'll be about 100 of the top breeders in the world will be there. And so we're looking forward to it.
There's a question in the chat room here, Dick, about the color of the egg. It's from Britson. Britson says, is it the egg that stays inside getting extra coats of color that make them so dark?
Well, it's actually as it passes through the little oil gland, the little gland, there's two of them there that spray that egg as it comes through. And apparently through selective breeding, the black copper hens tend to have apparently a larger sacs or glands that spray those. And we found that younger hens, and particularly in the spring of the year, they will lay their darkest eggs. As the summer goes on, the color lightens up some. And then if they go through a molt and then they stop laying for a while and then get their rest, their feathers come back in, and then they start laying again, then we get dark eggs again from them. And
now,
so they,
is there
they
a feed? Through. Is there a special feed that you can give the chickens to encourage the darker eggs?
You know, I've heard that. I don't know. Some combinations, possibly. I don't do it, but I've heard all kinds of things, different kind of oil you could put in their diets, special mixtures of feed. It's possible, I'm sure, and I wouldn't dispute it. I just I've never done it, and I do put occasionally when I'm really getting ready for the show, I'll put wheat germ oil, a lot of that in their feed. And their feathers tend to have a nice shine to them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I, as many others do with getting them ready, I'll use a little olive oil on their feet and also on their beak and the cone and make them shine up a little bit more, you know. And then some people use some kind of a glossy hairspray that they shine their feathers with to make them shine up real well.
The tips and tricks of showing.
Oh, yeah, and it's a lot of fun, you know, and it's so easy. And I've shown dogs for many years, very active, and just love going to dog shows and meeting people. But chicken shows are very inexpensive to enter, and $3 or $4 to enter a bird in the show. And it's the uncertainty the first time is the toughest, but once you find out how easy it is, it's just really fun, you know. And put your birds in their coops, and then you leave them, make sure they got food and water, and then leave them be. And most everybody heads for the sales area to look and see what's for sale, a little carrying crates to take your birds, and all kind of supplies, and frequently there's someone that sells veterinarian supplies and extra everything. And then there's the food area, and that's where everybody sort of gathers and talks. And sometimes one of the feed companies is giving away prizes you can sign up for. There's raffles to raise money for the poultry club that's hosting the show. But it's just fun to sit at the tables and listen to the old-timers and chat, talk, and certain things go along with showing. Sometimes reaching in the cages and all, I'll get my hand scratched up. And so I was at a show up in Kentucky, and sitting at the table with 20 people, and we're all just enjoying each other and talking and joking and all, and I said something about getting scratched, and was that a common problem with everybody else? And literally all 20 people stuck their arms and hands out, and they all had scratches from the cages. And we all got a big laugh out of that.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel so bad about being clumsy after that. And,
well, those wire cages, they do have some snags on them.
Oh, yeah.
Another quick question, Dick, is how many eggs about a year does the Moran tend to lay? Are they pretty production type, or you just get one or two a week from a point of lay hen, or what's their production?
They're high production. Once they've finished with their new feathers, then they will start laying, and my cuckoos had gone, we joke and call it, they've on strike. Well, they've just started back today laying, and they're usually heavy layers, and they will lay just straight on through to the end of the summer, and then they'll take another little hiatus and then start back. Weather conditions, lighting conditions, and a lot of people don't know that when there's less than 15 hours of light, that most breeds of chicken will stop laying. And so the way you can change that is by having lights on in your poultry house. And then that will give the waking hours long enough, and then they'll start laying again. But as summer wanes and the days get shorter, once it gets below 15 hours a day in light, then most chickens will quit laying. But they lay over 200 eggs a year. And it's very decent. And I have a few that seem to lay a little bit heavier. My whites seem to lay a little heavier. And the cuckoos lay generally very heavy. But things can stop them. If you move them from one site to another, sometimes they'll go on strike for a couple of weeks. But usually they lay in cycles, something like up to 18 days that they can lay an egg a day, and then they may stop for 10 days, 2 weeks, and then they'll start back.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Is that usual with other breeds, too?
It depends on the breed. Every breed seems to have a different cycle. You know, some breeds lay very few eggs, and then some, like I think it's the Black Americana, is one of the layingest of all of the breeds. And they lay as many as 300 eggs a day.
Yeah. I love the black you said the Black Americana?
Uh-huh, yes. And they're one of the heritage groups tries to, it's the family that started off in heritage vegetables and all, and then fruit trees and all, and then they got into the poultry, heritage poultry, and they seem to keep very good statistics, which they publish. And they have, over a long period of time, or several years now, they've been keeping statistics, and they print that on their website and list the ones that lay the most, on down to the ones that lay the very fewest eggs. And Marrons are up there in a very healthy land area. One of the unique things about them, and it's claimed, is that they even the old bird is fairly tender. A lot of older roosters and hens, when they get old, they tend to get pretty tough. But they're a very good eating bird, and they are a slow mature, and they tend to come into their full weight after about 14 to 18 months.
Okay.
So it's a little hard when we're showing in each of the four classes, and we have to have cockerels, and they can't come up to the weight almost at first. They've almost got to be right at 12 months to weigh enough to even be the
cockerel,
you know. And but by the time they're a cockbird and on up 15, 18 months, then they're a very heavy bird.
Yeah, and so they're dual purpose then, it sounds like.
Yes, they are, very much so, a dual purpose. Very docile, very friendly.
They are, yeah.
They're great for children. Children just love them. They've got such a winning way. And I've got them that love to come up, and if you sit down on a stool or something, they'll jump right up in your lap. But
I've got one that's broody right now. Copper Moran that's just sitting on some eggs, and she's the best little mother. She's just sitting there. Okay.
You know.
Well, listen, we're out of time, unfortunately, Peter. I can listen and chat for all afternoon. Wish maybe someday I'll have the opportunity to do that.
Martha Stewart loves this breed, and she uses the eggs on her show from Moran's, and then the James Bond series, James Bond only eats Moran eggs.
Oh, I've forgotten that. That's right.
Yes.
Now, and by the way, the password for today is Moran. Fancy that. So the password, secret password for today is Moran.
Well, it's been an honor to be on your show. And anybody's welcome
so
to visit in Springfield, Tennessee is where I live.
Okay, very, very good. Thank you so much. And Christine, also, thank you for coming on the show. It's been, as usual, just a wonderful, informative talk. So thank you both.
Okay, thanks a lot, Pat. That was really a pleasure. And thank you, Dick. I've been taking notes the whole time, and I learned a lot of new things again from you.
Well, thanks a lot. Good to talk with you and chat with you on the email.
Yes, we will. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Very good. Okay, Whisper, we've got just about 2.5 minutes left.
No problem. Another great show. Hope everybody out there enjoyed it. Hope you enjoyed it listening to the archive on iTunes, rpodcast.com, or on Zoom.com, or, of course, on Blog Talk Radio. All of our shows are podcast, so you can listen at your leisure. I want to thank everybody in the chicken chat room, all of our chicken chatneers. Appreciate y'all being in the chat room daily. We appreciate that. Want to remind everybody that tomorrow we'll welcome back Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply. Thursday, another great episode of the Back Home Magazine Hour with Richard Frutenberger. Another fun Friday. Collect those secret password, folks. We only have, two more. So today should have been password 18. We'll have one tomorrow, Wednesday. We'll have one on Thursday. And then Friday, the winning caller has to recite all 20 passwords. So we hope you'll stay with us. We hope you enjoy your day. If you're in path of all these bad storms coming out through the Midwest and over towards the East, bunker down, and we'll be thinking about you. And stay safe. And we will talk to you tomorrow at noon. Pat?
Yeah, it is. It's getting quite dark and stormy looking here, so I'll have to close my windows and bring the laundry in. So anyway, yes, today we've been talking with Christine Heinrich. She's the historian for the Society of the Preservation of Poultry Antiquities, and she's also the author of How to Raise Poultry, and her website is poultrybookstore.com. We've also been talking to Dick Dickerson, who is the champion behind bringing the Moran to the APA, so it's a recognized breed in America. So next time you're at any of the poultry stores, make sure and look up the chocolate egg layers. Andy Schneider, thanks to you for bringing us all together. Where would we be without you? It's certainly probably not sitting here chatting about chickens.
No, y'all probably be doing something out there doing productive stuff between 12 and 1:30.
Yeah, that's right. No moss on these Rolling Stones, anyway. Absolutely. Thanks to our chat room chicken ears, always, for clucking along and bringing your questions and all the friends that we've met in there. That chat room is just so special, and we do appreciate you so much. And, of course, thanks to blogtalkradio.com for providing the radio, the chat, and the video services. Oh, blessings to all. We love all you poultry pioneers so much, and may the flock be with you evermore. God bless everybody.